podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Ready to go the extra mile in a Volvo mild hybrid SUV this summer? No plug-in required. Whether you go to the mountains this summer, the ocean, or somewhere in between, Grandma! Volvo mild hybrid technology adds to a more refined driving experience so you can summer safely. Contact your local retailer to learn more or visit volvocars.com.
Hi everyone, JD here. Now it's going to be a big summer for Palace and for all of us now that we're allowed to see friends again in person. So what better way to celebrate not just the ending of lockdown but potentially a whole new era at Palace than with a free case of 8 Belgian beers from Beer 52. All you got to do is go to beer52.com/FYP and pay the £5.95 postage. And not only that, if you do it before July 13th, you'll get 2 extra beers totally free. Now we're hoping that Palace will dip into the transfer market and pull off a few summer hits of their own, and that's exactly what Beer 52 are doing. Their summer hits case will feature beer from some of the best small batch breweries in the world. Beer 52's beer experts are on a mission to find the best beer anywhere on the planet. Every month they visit a different country, find the best small batch breweries, sample their finest craft beer, and then carefully curate a case to be sent to their lucky members. Impress barbecue guests as you whip out an Elevation Pale Ale from Ireland's Wicklow Wolf Brewery. Watching the Euros in the company of a crisp double dry hopped IPA from Two Chefs Brewing in the Netherlands. So the options are endless. And if you don't like dark beer, choose the light option. It's that simple. Each case also comes with the award-winning beer magazine Ferment, as well as a tasty snack to enjoy alongside your beer. There's no minimum commitment. You can just take the free case, try the beers and see what you think. And if it's not for you, you can pause or cancel at any time. So just go to beer52.com/FYP. That's the word beer and the numbers 52.com/FYP to claim your free case of 8 craft beers now. Just got to pay the £5.95 for postage. And don't forget to claim before July 13th for those 2 extra free beers. Right, on with the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 5 Year Plan Podcast.
Hey!
Pod 386. It's a summer pod. Summer. I'm looking out my window in the cabin. It's a beautiful day. It's a nice summery pod. You might even be able to hear the birds cheeping behind me. Joining us, joining us two people that famously love summer. Kevin Day, hello.
It's pouring with rain if you look out of my window. And if you listen carefully, you can hear the road being resurfaced.
In many ways, the bird sound of South London. I've got a question here from Paulie Mantel. We're going to go straight into it for you, Kevin. How's Kevin been coping with the hot and sunny weather?
Thank you for asking, Paulie. Not well. To be perfectly honest, it's been very hot. It's taken all the edge off the Euros for me, having to watch it with every single window open and sweat pouring down your face.
Oh, dear. You are just such a bizarre person. Andy Street, hello to you. I can't remember if you like summer or not.
Well, it depends on who's paying me and what argument I've been asked to advance.
Summer loves summer.
There are arguments both ways, JD.
Yeah.
I used to really like summer. Then I had 2 young children who now wake up at 4:45 in the morning because they think it's light. And it is, in fact, light. And so I'm slightly more circumspect.
Brilliant. Well, look, we've been joined by a 4th member. It's only Jesse Boyce. Jesse, are you a summer fan? Are you a summer man?
Huge fan of summer. I can guess who isn't.
I didn't raise the subject, Jesse. I was perfectly happy if JD went straight into it.
I'm sorry I'm late, guys. I was just finishing my interview for the Palace job. it was my third round. I got through to the third round. First round was with Phil Alexander. Second round with Parrish. And the third round with Angry Eagle 1861 from Twitter.
Good. Well, I'm sure we can announce Jesse as manager and you'll probably be fired by the end of the podcast. Before we do that, can we get a drum roll actually for a shout out to a random patron? It's Mr. Pieter Koeman.
Ooh. No, hi Pieter.
Hi, Pieta. We'd love to hear where you're listening in from. I'm going to guess Netherlands. That's my guess for a name like that. But we'd love to hear from you. And it's great that we've got people around the globe listening in to Palace. Might be in London. You know, who knows? Anyway, you can join the Patreon and get all the rewards that Pieta gets, like post-match podcast, patron-only merchandise, access to the WhatsApp club at patreon.com/FYP. And patrons get 20% off our new line of merch, which is available to everybody at podcastmerch.co.uk/FYP-podcast. Did I send some merch to some of you guys? Did some of you guys receive some FYP merch?
No, I didn't get anything, but Ender's got a broken mug.
Yeah.
Oh, did he? Brilliant. But before it was broken, I'm sure it looked good. Kevin, did I send you some merch?
I got a T-shirt and a mask that doesn't fit.
Good.
A mask that, as I said before, is so tight, I need a safe word when I'm wearing it.
But please do buy some, listeners. It's really, really high quality.
But that sounds to me like that keeps you very safe, Kevin. The tighter, the safer. That sounds very wrong.
It is a lot. I do have a lot of people stopping me to say, "What does that say on your mask?" And I say, "Typical Palace." And they go, "What does that mean?"
There you go. And then the
joke. I go, "You know, the 5-year plan pod." And they go, "Oh yeah, that one, Jim Daly in his shed." Yeah, we know. Yeah.
Wow, I'm famous. Well, there you go. Yes, we have... actually, the masks are not available. They were patron only. So very lucky to have one of those.
Wow.
But there you go. Can I do a really quick shout-out as well? Sorry to do some sort of self-promo. My solo show is at Brighton Fringe next week, Wednesday and Thursday. Tickets still available for the Wednesday. Thursday sold out, which is amazing. Brilliant. So thank you to everyone that's bought a ticket for that. Still some available for Wednesday. So 8 p.m. at the Caxton Arms, Wednesday, 23rd of June. Tickets available at jimdailycomedy.com/gigs. It's £5. So please do come along. It should be a lot of fun. I've literally just finished writing it, just in time. Something that Palace haven't done in time, Kevin, is appoint a manager. Can you guess how many questions we've got from listeners about managers for this podcast?
167.
It's not quite that. It's about 30, but it's not far off. To be honest, I'll go for this one first. I'll come for your thoughts on the manager and the latest. I'm not even sure what the latest is. To be honest, I've almost stopped looking.
The Swiss Roy Hodgson is the latest as we speak. This is Thursday afternoon, and Lucien Favre, the 63-year-old ex-manager of Borussia Dortmund, is apparently next on the Steve Parish radar.
And what are your thoughts on him? Palace Ash has said, Favre, next manager, ? Quality if true. Do you think quality if true?
No, I know a reasonable amount about European football, but he was a name I had to double check via search engines. I know I can't say Google because you have to say other search engines are available.
No, happy with that.
Listen, he quite clearly isn't the first choice. And we've quite clearly alienated a lot of the second choices by not making them our first choice and announcing that a manager-era appointment was imminent and then not getting Nuno. He seems to have a good reputation, but his nickname, according to The Guardian, is the Swiss Roy Hodgson. He's 63. It seems to me a bit odd to get rid of the 73-year-old Roy Hodgson and get the 63-year-old Swiss one in. If we were a team that had a lot of continental players already, if we had 7, 8 or 9 European players in our squad, I might think it was a better idea, but we're not, and he has no Premier League experience, so I'm not that excited. But the way things are going, it's just a different rumour every 2 days, isn't it, basically? So
yeah, it does have a bit of a summer 2017 vibe to before we got Frank. Andy, given his experience in Switzerland, I'd have thought the Swiss Roy Hodgson was probably Roy Hodgson.
Yeah.
Well, do you know much about this Favre guy? What are your thoughts on him?
Well, he's got a good record having managed Dortmund and Nice, hasn't he? I think he did pretty well. Was it Mönchengladbach he was at as well, I think, off the top of my head?
Yeah,
and so managed in a couple of top leagues, obviously, as was mentioned, I think, on the Pod Extra. I think the link had come up by then. I may be wrong. But he obviously doesn't have any experience yet in the Premier League, but there are plenty of managers who show some pedigree in the big continental European leagues and then come here and do pretty well. There are some who have that pedigree and come here and don't do so well. It's a difficult league to come to from having no background in it. But I mean, I think you could certainly do a lot worse. And there's probably far lower stature of managers available than those who very recently managed the likes of Erling Haaland, Jude Bellingham, Jadon Sancho. Obviously, we don't have players of that quality, but that will, I would have thought, engender a certain amount of respect from players in our squad who go, oh gosh, this guy's managed some big players. We should listen to what he's got to say here. by all accounts, he's you know, a top coach. So I think we could do a lot worse.
He's very harsh on Martin Kelly there, Andy.
His playing style might be in issues. One German journalist described it as death by a thousand passes, which is not something I think Palace fans would be particularly excited about. But yes, he's got a decent enough record at a decent enough level in continental football. But so did Frank de Boer. The Premier League is such a different kettle of fish. It wouldn't be particularly inspiring, but of course, if he were to be our manager, he'd be the best manager in the world until we get rid of him.
Yeah, I am nervous about appointing a manager that hasn't managed in the Premier League before, which is sort of why my favourites would be likes of Dyche, probably just purely because of that top flight experience. Although, I don't know, Jesse, maybe it is time to be a bit more bold again. What are your thoughts on Favre? And actually, can I give you this question or comment from Croydon in Exile? Podcast title, do us a favour, Lucien. And then they've said, I'll get my coat. So I think you can make your own mind up on that. J-Dog, what do you reckon?
They just stole my joke.
Sorry.
Are you Croydon in Exile then? Is that your Twitter handle?
No. I did ask you that was the other day. I have no idea. Well, it just seems like we're running out of road, really. So yeah. not in such a bad way, because, you know, I don't know a lot about Lucien Favre, but it probably says more about me than him. But it does feel like it's quite fashionable to have German experience at the moment, doesn't it? Mm. It's definitely been a shift in the Premier League. Tuchel's obviously coming in after Klopp and Wagner. So to have experience in the Bundesliga seems to be a thing right now. Seems to be valued. I guess it's just good to have options when it looks like we're on our plan C.
And of course, Norwich's coach as well.
Yeah, and not forgetting the Norwich coach.
Well, the other thing about him as well is that, of course, we now learn that it's always been his ambition to manage in the Premier League. But the Premier League's been going on for quite some time, and he's 63, and no one in the Premier League has knocked on his door before. You sometimes think that could be for a reason as well. I mean, he's clearly a good coach, but it wouldn't be an inspiring choice, considering how close we came to Nuno, apparently. And Sky, you know, Sky are very good at dealing with rumours, but they're also a serious news organisation, and they actually announced Nuno's appointment was imminent. They put it across the strap at the bottom of the news for about 14 hours overnight. So that announcement clearly was on the cards, and that was one that we'd all would have been probably excited about. And the trouble is, you get that close and then it doesn't happen. What you're doing is sending a message to people like Sean Dyche and Frank Lampard that you're now very much our second choice, basically, which is why I still think Steve Cooper is the most likely option, which again, it's not very inspiring, but Brighton fans will point out the fact that Graham Potter had a really similar background to Steve Cooper and came in and apparently turned Brighton into the most attractive football team in the world, despite the fact they finished below us in the Premier League.
Well crowbarred in. Jesse, do we need an inspiring manager? Or actually, given where Palace are in terms of the transition of the player contracts and stuff, do we just need someone soon and someone maybe reliable? Maybe, I know Kevin talks about inspiring appointments, but do we really need that right now?
Well, you'd like to think you're going to do something different to Roy. Otherwise, why would you move him on?
Yeah.
I think you've got to kind of... I mean, I'll come back. The last time we had the crazy pod at Kevin's house, I kind of said this. I just don't get... When it was clear that Hodgson was... His last contract extension was pretty much a 12-month countdown to his departure, I don't get how there hasn't been some sort of forward planning. And we've talked about this... in terms of Potter, when Brighton got rid of, you can get a rookie manager and you can get someone untested in like Brighton did, but they sacked Houghton and appointed Potter 5 days later in the middle of May. So if you're going to take that route, you do have to give that manager time to bed in and a full pre-season when most of their squad isn't already looking for contracts. So I don't know how more difficult we're going to make it for ourselves on paper, but you've got to feel like it's got to be worth this wait.
Yeah, you'd like to think
well, also,
so.
But I mean, Andy will know this better than any of us. I spoke to another agent, sorry, Andy's not an agent, he's a lawyer, he just has the demeanour of a super agent. I spoke to an agent called Tony Sharkey on the Price of Football pod yesterday, who said the big problem for Palace, and he said it was very quiet, there were no gossip or rumours, but he said the big problem is those players that are out of contract. He said, how can you negotiate as an agent? How do you negotiate a contract with a player when you've got no idea who the new manager is going to be and whether or not they'll want you around the place in any way, shape or form? And as Jesse says, you know, pre-season training is only about 3 weeks away. Whoever's coming in is going to have a real kickball at scramble to A, decide who we keep on at the club, B, decide who we get in at the club. And, you know, the season's started. We've had the fixtures out already and we're no closer to knowing who's going to be managing us for the first weeks of the season. And we've got 4 out of 5 really difficult games in the first weeks of the season.
Andy, do you want to reply to that?
To which specific part?
Because he was on the phone, which is why I included him in the question.
Could you wrap up his phone?
It turned out the answer is no, he wasn't listening. He was doing something else completely.
I think, well, Andy, let me add on to that. I think Andros had said something similar on TalkSport, actually, about contract issues and stuff like that and timing. I guess it's just one of those things. It's difficult, isn't it, at the moment, I guess, until the manager comes in, really, for anyone to know where they are. But I guess it's probably the same in any business.
Yeah, I mean, I think the points were made in the last pod, actually, and I know it was made because I actually did listen to this just before the pod started, so I know it was said about how there's a difficulty if you're trying, in one sense, to be a director of football style model, while on the other, attempting to have a manager who has a say over the players. And it should be really one or the other. And Palace probably sits somewhere in between, so that we want the operational continuity of the head coach not being the only determinative factor, but equally we seem to want the head coach also to sign off on players. And I understand that, you know, if you have a finite transfer budget, as most clubs do, what you don't want to do when footballers are now so expensive is to spend £30 million on one player who may not be played.
Yeah.
Because there's a huge opportunity cost to doing so. You know, you could have ended up signing one or two players that the coach would play, and then you're not in quite so much trouble. So I do understand it, and I think it's only sensible that that's the approach that's taken. And we're in a slightly weird period still, because the seasons are still being dealt with in a slightly compressed manner because of the first lockdown. International tournaments are now sandwiching a couple of fast-track seasons. You've got the Qatar World Cup coming up in 2022 as well. So the football just doesn't seem to stop. And I think that does have impacts on the market too. And equally, it's difficult at the moment because I wouldn't expect it to, I said this a couple of weeks ago, but I wouldn't expect it to be a heavily liquid transfer market this time around. I don't think there's going to be a huge amount of massive, massive deals. And so that means that it's far more difficult for some of the clubs further down the spectrum to know who they're going to be able to acquire externally and therefore who they need to absolutely extend because they're not going to get any alternatives. So, I mean, there's lots of stuff up in the air, but I think Palace are far from the only club in that position.
Yeah, very true. Actually, I've got a mate of mine who's a Spurs fan, and they haven't appointed a new manager either. So we were having very similar moans.
Or Everton.
Everton, exactly. Yeah.
Just all abolish managers.
Well, Everton seems to have gone through this, from what I hear. Everton have gone through the same process with Nuno as we have, which is why, bizarrely, Benitez seems to be the new favourite for the job. Because, again, 4 days ago, according to Sky, Everton were on the verge of signing Nuno in the same way as we were. And then those talks mysteriously broke down, because whether it's because he wants more money or whether he wants to bring in, depending who you believe, 4, 8, 112 Portuguese coaches and players. But it's, you know, it's right that we're not the only one. The trouble is, it's normally us who are the only one. That's the trouble. And we're left in a situation, as we always are, that it looks like we're not a particularly professional club. But clearly, we're coming up to our 9th season, is it, in the Premier League? So we're doing something right.
Yeah.
It's just that externally, it often seems that we're not. But we just have to trust that the appointment process is a sensible, decent one. It clearly is. But you want to get it resolved sooner rather than later, because especially if it's Favre, because he's going to be coming in and looking at players like, you know, Martin Kelly, who I presume he won't know much about. So he's going to have a lot of decisions to make about, if it's his decision, about retaining players that he probably doesn't have that much knowledge of, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, he'll know about Benteke and he'll know about PVA and people like that, but there's going to be quite a few people on our team that he's not really au fait with, and yet we're going to be asking him to decide whether or not these are players he wants to build his squad around. And we're also not giving him much time to bring in players that he wants, because I'm sure we have got targets lined up. We almost definitely will have, but these might be players that he doesn't fancy. These might be players that we've lined up because we thought Sean Dyche was coming in or Nuno was coming in.
Yeah. Jesse?
I'm just going to stick my neck out with an extremely rare endorsement for something Simon Jordan said. I think actually it's probably the most sensible thing he's said about the club since he's left the club. I'm going to try and find it. It was on Talksport yesterday about 10 to 2. Made a mental note because I need to find it. But he was asked by Jim White about his position on the Palace manager. And it was quite remarkable. He was fully actually showing a lot of support and a lot of glowing praise for the way the club's been run in recent years. He managed to rattle off our managerial succession without even thinking about it and just talked about the ins and outs of that and about how decisive the club were when Frank de Boer went wrong. And then I think Jim White said it's rumours that Fulham are after Cooper, and Jordan was like, take him, Fulham, take him. I just don't think it's wise for Palace right now. I think it was the best thing he's said about Palace since he left, so it's worth finding. I'll find it and we can tweet it later, Jim.
Okay, well, look, on that bombshell of praising Simon Jordan, which I think is the first time that's ever happened on the podcast in 13 years, I think we should take a quick break while we can all sort of regain our senses. And we'll be right back after this.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Welcome back to the Profit Plan Podcast.
Hey. Jesse's our new manager. Just announced. Congratulations, Jesse. Brilliant.
What are you going to do about Martin Kelly? You keeping Kelly?
I'm going to put him up front. great target man. When Tekkers goes off, off form as he probably will. Now he's signed the contract. Kelly target man.
Wow, that's the kind of forward approaching thinking that we needed, Kevin, in the club.
Yeah, I don't want a manager that cynical though. That's what he thinks about Benteke. We want someone with an open mind and a spring in his step.
Benteke's back. Anyway, speaking of Palace, obviously, that's what we do on the podcast. I was thinking of Benteke, and I couldn't think of a link to link it in, so there we go. oh God. This is why I need a summer break. Right, the fixtures have been released, Kevin. That's what I was trying to say, that's what we're getting to. The fixtures are out for next season, and Palace have got a very tricky start. 14th of August, Chelsea away. 21st, Brentford at home. Got to get 3 points there. West Ham away. Tottenham at home. Liverpool away. Brighton at home. Leicester at home. Arsenal away. Newcastle at home. Man City away. And then you're into November. Mm. That's got to be the trickiest start we've had since we've come back up.
I'd like to know if there's ever been a season ever when we've started with four London derbies, as I think we are doing, are we not?
We did have a run, didn't we, in the previous season, but I don't think it was at the start. No.
It's that straight. Every year the fixtures come out, and every year it seems to be Palace are the only team that are playing difficult teams every week. Doesn't seem to be any respite. Brighton seem to be playing Burnley about five times, and if they're not playing Burnley, they're playing Watford and Norwich, and we seem to be playing a really difficult team every single week. It's a tough start. You would hope you'd be getting 3 points against Brentford, but then we would hope we got 3 points against Huddersfield when they come up. So you can't you can't guarantee that. It's it's tricky. I mean, sometimes we beat Man United at the start of last season. Sometimes it's a good time to be playing teams. Tottenham will probably have a new manager and be coping with a new style as well. So who knows? And you have to, yeah, it's a terrible cliche, but you have to play them sometime. But it would be nice. I mean, this is why you want the managerial thing resolved, because it'd be much nicer to say, well, it'll be fine because we've got this manager and he'll bring these players in. But it's a tricky start. There's no two ways about it. But yeah, if we'd come out of that start with 6 points, we're delighted, basically.
What did we have against Huddersfield in 2017 that we're also going to have against Brentford this season?
Well, we went into that game. Remember, it's Frank de Boer's first game, and newly promoted Huddersfield, you know, new manager. And we thought we'd brush them aside, be qualified for Europe by Christmas. And then it's probably one of the most single depressing walks back to the Portsmouths I've had for quite some time, that one.
Yeah.
The Frank de Boer bubble. I mean, Brentford, I couldn't be more delighted that Brentford are in the Premier League. I think it's a brilliant thing to happen. And I think just based on the way they played in the playoff, which again is another negative for Steve Cooper, they were really good in the playoff final, and I think they'll make a decent fist of it in the Premier League, which is annoying, because as ever you look at the three promoted teams and think, can we finish above them? Norwich, you don't know if Norwich come up with the same philosophy as they did last time, which is to, you know, enjoy themselves and take the parachute money, then we'll be fine. Watford probably always be difficult to beat, but you'd like to think we'll finish above them. But it's somewhat of a tragedy that even this far into our Premier League tenure, you're still looking at the three promoted clubs to see whether we'll finish above them. But
yeah, well, yeah, that's true. But I think that's because we're having a summer of transition, and also because, to be honest, the Premier League is just very, very strong at the moment. You know, I'm looking at it in November. Burnley away is not going to be easy. Villa are spending crazy amounts of money. Leeds are spending money and doing very well. So actually, There aren't really any weak teams. Even the teams that have come up are good teams.
I'm not the only one that's worried. I've had about 30 people ask me whether I've got to do my piece of paper yet. I might well do it. I might have to do it after the Brentford game. I might have a 36 team fixture piece of paper.
Wow, you're going to need big pockets for that one. Jesse, the fixture list hasn't been very kind to us in terms of away day trips. So we've got Brighton away in January, so that'll be freezing. Norwich away, always a good one. 8th of February. So the fixture list has really been particularly unkind to us, isn't it?
I think we've played Brighton in December or January every year since they came up. I've been looking. That's the first thing we looked when we had Bournemouth as well. Been looking for the FYP away day in the sunshine by the sea. We've been denied throughout. Even Norwich, which was a great away day the year that they came up, and Kabai scored there. That was in the blazing August sunshine. We've not got really any of those. I suppose we've got West Ham away to look forward to, and Chelsea away. Boat trip, as Andy Street suggested. So we have to pretend it's a London sort of away day for us, I guess. But it's, the fixture list is both meaningless and meaningful all at the same time. It's sort of, you look at it and you try and imagine your season panning out and pick the difficult months, but you know, doesn't ever work out that way. It was also just caught everyone by surprise because of the Euros.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was coming out. I don't know if anyone else did, but I didn't hear anything about it. So it's been a good bonus in amongst all the Euro activity. I sort of get a bit worried about seeing things like Man United on the last game that we don't really want.
No, the run before that isn't brilliant. Villa away, Watford at home, Saints away, Leeds home. Actually, Andy, I'm looking through. I can't actually particularly see any nice runs. February, Norwich away, Brentford away, Chelsea home, Burnley home. You maybe might be looking at, you know, 7 or 8 points there. But even the big fixtures we look for, Boxing Day, Spurs away, that we got a terrible record there. And Norwich at home on the 28th, West Ham at home on January the 1st. Are there any particular fixtures, Andy, you're looking forward to from that? I don't know why I've asked a lawyer that question. I know the answer's going to be no.
I'm looking forward to all of them. We'll play everyone home and away, same as every season. I think at the start of last season, sorry, the start of the season before this one, or midway through that season, I didn't know we'd get the opportunity for away days now, and the opportunity to get back in stadia. So I think I'm just grateful that football is going ahead.
Well, also, I'm quite pleased that we're Brentford's first away game as well, because hopefully the stadium will be full, and that will be a fantastic atmosphere for with Brentford fans here. The irony of this conversation is that if Roy Hodgson was still our manager, I wouldn't be worried at all.
Yeah.
I would be looking at it and say, yeah, we might pick up a couple of away points in that first five, and yeah, but that's...
Well, I've got to say, I'm absolutely furious that the first away game that we've got at Elland Road since I've had in-laws who are Leeds fans and who would be looking after my children were at a weekend game with me going out on a Jolly Boys outing has been scheduled for a Tuesday night in November. Thank you very much, Fixture Computer. When I say, Jen, can we go up to Leeds and drop the kids off at 6 p.m. on a Tuesday night? I don't think it's going to wash so well.
Sue them. Sue the Premier League and the computer. Take it for every court in the land.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah. I think it's... Is it not Man United Leeds on the first day? Which I've... Which the computer needs a big slap on the metal back for doing that.
No, you're right. Kevin, you're really right about the Roy thing. And I look at those first few fixtures, and actually, had we had Roy, it would have been difficult, but I'd be confident to pick off you. I think for a new manager, whoever it is, whether it is Favre or whoever, Dyche, it's going to be... I think that's a difficult run for any manager that's going to be sussing out his new team. So that is going to be a very, very tricky start to the season.
Did you clock the AFCON dates are when Wilf will be away when we play Brighton away?
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about AFCON.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's convenient, isn't it?
Wow. It's going to be an interesting season. Although, having said that, you know, we could end this part on a depressing note, those reasons aside. But Andy's point about us being back in the stadium is excellent. I'd actually almost forgotten that we will hopefully be back in stadium. So, yes, it's going to be a tough opening start to the season, Kevin. And, yeah, we're going to miss Will for January. And, yes, we're going to play Spurs away on Boxing Day. But at least we'll hopefully touch wood, and I'm touching literally all the wood in my cabin, we will be there.
Well, do you know what? There's one other thing that's really, really annoying me. Really annoying me. I know why Streety's laughing, because you said touch wood and he's a child.
Come on.
No, he's touching all the wood.
Well, you can't touch all the wood. Your shed is wider than you are, so clearly you can't touch all the wood at the same time.
I can in this room.
I merely raised an eyebrow.
You can't. You're touching two walls, but you're in a room. So there's two walls you're not touching.
You said in this room, you said in that room, you can't, and I can. And also... But you can't, touching all the wood in a cabin. Come on, what else am I going to say?
You're in a four-walled room. You're touching two walls.
All right.
Anyway, my point is that it's the one thing that's really, really annoying me is there's not even a sniff of a rumour about the new kit.
Oh, that is annoying.
Normally by now I'm either placating myself with a new kit or moaning, forgetting everything else because I hate the kit. There's nothing. There's not even a sniff.
They double it up. They double it up for when players are signed. They don't know. They wait.
The manager. Yeah. So we'll see the new kit in September. Brilliant. shall we take a break then? After chatting about fixtures, there you go. That's the fixture list reviewed and done. After break, let's talk about the thing that Jesse just mentioned. Euro 2020.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Hello and welcome back to the 5 Year Plan Podcast.
Hey.
It is our summer. Is it still raining where you are, Kevin?
It is.
Yeah, I bet you're delighted.
I am. Well, I'm not, because it's sort of a warm rain. I don't like it. It's not...
A warm rain. All right, Prince. warm rain. Let's move on to Euro 2020 chat. We are a week in. In fact, today is the second round of matches. No, it's not. Yesterday was. Anyway, we're into round two. Kevin, have you been enjoying 2020? England got off to a great start. You must have enjoyed that.
I have been enjoying it, although when you drink as much as I do, seeing a wall chart that says Euro 2020 when you get up in the morning is really, really, really confusing. Now, I thought there was a slight element of people getting a little bit carried away about the England performance. I thought it was very good. I didn't think it was quite as brilliant as the pundits were having us believe. But I don't think there's any team I've seen so far, including France, that would make me think there's no one England can't beat in this tournament. It's been lovely, to be perfectly honest. I mean, we're actually missing Ukraine, North Macedonia now, which is a shocking, shocking thing to ask us to do. But it's great. I love tournaments. It's always the summer's always much easier to get through when you've got three games a day to look forward to. I think the quality of the football's been really good. Seeing fans back in the stadium, the hungry fans were just magnificent. Seeing a full stadium against Portugal. Then you've got little bits of controversy with Cristiano Ronaldo wiping $4 billion off Coca-Cola shares in the space of 10 seconds. Yeah, and then, I mean, the only big talking point will be the way UEFA behaved after Christian Eriksen, and thank God that he seems to be well, but as I was explained, bearing in mind that UEFA made them play the European Cup final while the fighting was still going on at Hazel, it's no surprise that UEFA want to get games continued. So that will be a blot on this tournament. But other than that, I think it's been thoroughly enjoyable, especially yesterday when halfway through the BBC coverage of the game, it switched to ITV commentary, which is very good. Yeah, and then just to an overhead camera shot for 3 minutes. And I was really upset because the ITV commentary obviously wasn't live. They record that for the highlights. So I was desperate for one of the ITV commentators to start going out to Jonathan Pearce. It's shit, isn't it? it's been a great tour, but it's lovely. It's just so exciting to have games in the afternoon and the early evening. It's brilliant. And it gives you a way to plan the day. It's good.
It certainly does when you're like me, unemployed. It is great to have something to actually do. I'm actually really enjoying the tournament. I think it's really enjoyable.
Indeed. Can I point this out? You're a freelance comedian. You're not unemployed.
Well, no, I am. Kevin, you have to lie for me. It's okay. All right. Mm. I am very unemployed. I'm actually enjoying the tournament. I think it's actually really, really enjoyable. There's been some really good football, some great goals. Obviously, apologies to Scotland fans, but Patrick Schick's lob against Scotland was excellent. There's been some really, really good moments. Although, as you say, Kevin, you know, right to draw attention to the Christian Eriksen incident. And obviously, we all send FYP our best to Christian, and not just him, but Denmark fans, Finnish fans that are in the stadium, and everyone connected to the Danish national team. And the news does seem to be positive with Christian recovering. In fact, he was able to watch the last 10 minutes, apparently, from his hospital bed, which is good. And there were some lovely moments, a bit where the Danish fans were singing Christian and the Finnish fans were singing Eriksen. I think moments like that make you appreciate, yes, this tournament is fantastic and enjoyable, but also it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. And I think that was a real moment for us to realise that. So we do send our best to Christian, absolutely. But Andy, what were your thoughts on the England game? Because it reminded me a little bit, actually, of when Palace were good under Roy. They were very professional and very compact and quite sort of reliable. And that's actually what England felt like. And that's the first time for a while that people can talk about England in that kind of respect.
Well, my main thought during the game was, why on earth have they scheduled this for 2 p.m. on a Sunday when I've got a four-year-old to entertain? And why am I here filling up this paddling pool in my back garden, only listening to the TV, which is 30 yards away that way, and trying to glean what's going on, and instead trying to fill this paddling pool? There's kind of a proclivity amongst some fans just to criticise teams who don't go completely for the jugular at all times. I've seen some fans having to go at France in a similar fashion because they sort of play on the break and they're slightly compact. That's just the modern game to a certain extent. I mean, it would be great if we played absolutely, or England, whichever way, if you want to say we or England, it would be great if England played, you know, Foden and Grealish and Sancho and all these amazing attacking talents that they've got, but you're not ever going to find a coach who's going to do that. And to control the game in the way that they did against a pretty good Croatian side, and a Croatian side that embarrassed them in certain parts of the game in the semi-final 2 years ago when they were just so far better than England, I think it was no mean feat at all.
True.
And it was a big contrast, I think, with that game. And obviously, back then England didn't have Foden in the team. Back then, Luka Modric was 32 on 35, and Croatia were that bit younger and that bit fitter and that bit more mobile. But And England have brought in some significant new talent as well, like, you know, Calvin Phillips, who just looks absolutely fantastic at the very, very top level. But I don't think anyone should be sneering at beating a very top level team, Croatia, in the competent, confident and efficient manner that England did.
Yeah, absolutely. It shows that really in those 3 years, England have progressed and Croatia have regressed. And I think that showed on the pitch.
I have to say, JD, before I forget, my absolute favourite moment of the tournament so far, though, was supplied during Peter Crouch's yearly Euro show, where Maya Jammer asked Charlie Adam, ex-Scotland international, if there was much of a rivalry between England and Scotland before Euro 96. When it had to be explained to her that there was a little bit of tension between the two people before Paul Gascoigne scored against.
Oh dear! Yeah, they only tore down the goals once.
Yeah, I know. And then she also said, when Ian Sterling came here, was explaining that there are a lot of funny players in the Scotland squad. She said, "Well, the Scots are famous for the crack, aren't they?" Peter Crouch said, "No, it's the Irish." It's like,
oh wow! Oh, that's, I'm about to say, I can't believe that made the edit. It's live, isn't it?
So, it's live. Yeah, it's live.
Yeah. Well, actually, we'll come on to Scotland and Wales in a minute, actually, because obviously they are partaking as well. Wales actually pretty much gone through, don't we?
Yeah.
Jesse, your thoughts on England quickly, because it does seem that like Southgate has changed the culture amongst that squad. I've seen constant VTs and stuff on TV, but pundits talking about the England players playing without fear at the moment, which is obviously not something you ever said about England before.
Southgate definitely looks more determined, doesn't he? He looks a little bit more grit.
The waistcoat's gone, isn't it? It's serious.
The waistcoat's gone. Yeah, he's just looking a little bit more focused than ever, really. And I think true England tradition, started a recognised player in a completely different position on the other side of the pitch, but it worked for him, you know. And that's a brave move, because if that didn't work, the fingers would have been pointing very quickly at him if we'd not won that game. So he clearly just wanted to, you know, the stat going around everywhere before the match was England had never won their opening fixture at the Euros, and Croatia had never lost one. So he was clearly mindful of that and just wanting to be quite cautious, not getting too gung-ho too quickly. I was surprised that he didn't make a few more subs given the heat a bit earlier. I thought Sterling would probably have come off earlier, but credit to him. He was also under pressure for, you know, having a terrible season and yet still getting started. There's one thing about Southgate, he is definitely loyal to his sort of hardcore of Pickford, Trippier, Sterling, he loves those players, and he will find clearly in the case of Tripper, he'll find a place for him in the team. You know, he's delivered that amazing free kick in the last World Cup and so on. So I hope that isn't his downfall. He's a little too loyal. In the same way, I think he was a bit too loyal to Ali after a terrible season in the World Cup. He completely did not deserve to be starting the semi-final. I think that was detrimental. So that's the only thing about Southgate. I hope his loyalty, he can see through his own loyalties. I just to add a few Euro tidbits, I've really enjoyed it so far. VAR's found its rightful place as a supporting act instead of the main show.
Yeah.
So there's lots to learn there. Frank de Boer's continuing his brand of recognised defensive frailties. He said before the game that his team will concede goals. Yeah. I think he was trying to point out because he didn't have the likes of Van Dijk. But I love the fact that he said that and still started PVA. I thought that was brilliant.
Well, on that vein, Kevin, Daniel J. Edwards has said, how good did PVA look as a wing back for Holland?
Wow, it's winger more than anything. That's the thing. I mean, it looks like PVA is going, but it's one of the arguments we've had for the last couple of seasons is whether PVA could play further forward. And it looked like De Boer told him not to worry about defence. The same with Denzel Dumfries. Both of them were so high up the pitch for a lot of the game. And when they were 2-0 up, it looked like a work of genius. But then when they conceded two quick goals, but yeah, PVA did look good. I think it's interesting, coming back to what Jesse was saying about Trippier, Southgate's, not justification, but Southgate pointed out afterwards that Trippier's had a brilliant season at Atletico. And like he says, England fans, as Streety said, often, you know, if you go out of off the radar, England fans forget that you're a good player. But I think genuinely one of the reasons why I've got more hope about this England team is that it's not dominated by one club. I mean, you've got two or three Man City players, but in tournaments gone by, when the team and the squad have been basically made up of Liverpool, Man United, Arsenal, Chelsea players who genuinely didn't like each other, And now you haven't got enough players to form a clear. And you've got we are the second youngest squad in the tournament. And that's, I think that's brilliant. The fact that Bellingham came on for Kane at the end of that game is fantastic. And it's like, even if it doesn't happen this tournament, for the first time in years, you think, well, we've got a team that can genuinely, if they stick together, can win. And also, as somebody else pointed out, a lot of these youngsters have won tournaments at age levels for England anyway. So it's not, the idea of winning things in a white shirt isn't new for them. So I mean, these are genuinely exciting times.
Did you hear that at the time of the last Euros, Jade Bellingham was 12?
Wow, really?
Wow. And just, he came on for the England captain. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think, but as Kerry says, I think it's very exciting. And also that point about not being a club dominating the players. That's another thing Southgate sorted out, which is the cliques inside the squad.
Yeah.
That actually, they all now really get on with each other, and there isn't these factions that there used to be in previous squads. Andy, you've got a question from Chris Emmanuel. Good old Chris. Friend of the pod.
Hi, Chris.
He says, which one tournament wonder will we sign for way too much after Euro 2020? I mean, there's that Jay Williams at Wales looks half decent, doesn't he? What are your thoughts on... Well, can do that question and then give me your thoughts on Wales as well, because they've done very well so far. Big result against Turkey.
Well, let's just talk about Wales. It was a fantastic game last night. I tend to sort of oscillate between admitting to my Welsh heritage and ancestry if they're doing really well, and then pretending that there isn't any if they're doing particularly badly. And right now I'm just getting out the Welsh flag. They were fantastic. I've not really seen any players who suggest to me going to be one tournament wonders, and Palace don't tend generally to sign those sort of players anyway. But yeah, I mean, Wales, they were very fortunate against Switzerland, where Switzerland kind of overran them and had quite a lot of the opportunities. But I thought that they were fantastic last night against Turkey. It was just a really brilliant game of tournament football, end to end, lots of tension, fans going back in the stadium, and there was a real atmosphere to it caused by the Turkish fans. Yeah, there was some argy-bargy, there was goal on the break, Gareth Bale playing fantastically and still missing a penalty. Just had absolutely everything. So, I mean, Wales, if they're anything like they were in 2016, there'll be nothing if not entertaining and compelling to watch throughout this tournament. And they should now make the final 16. Who knows how far they'll go? I mean, they're now, you know, Aaron Ramsey and Gareth Bale are that bit older than they were in 2016, when, aren't we all? But they were, you know, particularly in their prime back then. So I don't think they'll go quite as far as they did in 2016. But they've got that real togetherness to them that suggests that they'll be difficult to run over.
Can I answer the first part of that question?
Yep.
Who we might sign? So this agent I interviewed yesterday, as I spoke about, I said one of the annoying things on commentary is that every single player, especially in some of the Eastern European teams, the commentator will say, oh, they're linked with so-and-so, they're linked with so-and-so, and they never, you know, none of them are linked with Palace. He said that's any of those players that are going to teams in across Europe, that deal was already done. He said it's almost unheard of for somebody to have a good tournament out of nowhere, and there's a scramble to buy him. He said that clubs will be tracking those players. He said if one of them scores two or three goals, that'll add some money to his transfer fee. But it's just not the way things are done, that, you know, a manager's watching telly and going, oh, that North Macedonian lad looks good, let's buy him.
Well, this is Palace, Kevin.
Well, it's true, but so you would hope that that's true. It probably is the way we do things, isn't it? Really, so, and then we'll probably watch it on Plus One, and somebody else has already signed him. So we're watching it an hour after everybody else.
I think you are right about those, the way transfers are done, actually, and it is. El Hadji Diouf was the last one I could think of, really, after a World Cup, where people did scramble to get in, and it didn't turn out to be that good. J-Dog, on the just on the Wales squad, I would say that their strength is their togetherness. I mean, literally, that is their motto, isn't it? I think togetherness in strength or something. But that is something that I think the England squad now have that they didn't have. But there's something about this Wales squad, and has been since last tournament, that's just inherently really likable.
Yeah, I was at Euro 2016 in Lille and saw the Wales-Belgium match.
Wow.
And it was amazing. Just because I think, obviously, there was Hennessy was playing, Johnny Esther was about to come on but didn't because of Coleman was changing his mind, and Joe Ledley was playing, so there's three Palace players at the time, and Ashley Williams scored that header, I think Sam Vokes scored a header, and then Robson Kanu scored from a Cruyff turn.
Oh,
It was amazing, and it felt then that the Welsh team had something that maybe England didn't really. So it's good to see us having sort of approach to that togetherness, like you say. And I've heard Bale's post-match talk. We talked about himself and Ramsey. They've been playing together. They must have been playing together. They're about knocking on the same age. Mm. They must have been playing together for Welsh national teams for 15, 20 years. So they must know each other so well. It's just great for Wales. They're both fit at the same time because that's been quite rare. And I think their next game is Italy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they're both through. So that's going to be a fantastic match. I cannot wait for that.
What I love about Gareth Bale as well is he's somebody who's a player of his quality. It's not always the case, but he just so loves playing for his country.
Mm. Yeah. You get that vibe from the entire Welsh squad. The England squad, I think.
But you do, but you know, lesser players sometimes go, of course, it's a massive plus for them, but it's something like Bale, who's had a brilliant career.
Yeah.
Who could easily find himself injured. Yeah, the way Ryan Giggs used to find himself injured for a lot of Wales games. Yeah. Bale could easily sit that out, but he doesn't. He wants to get out there, and he gives everything he can for his country, which I think is fantastic.
Good. I agree.
It's good to see that visibly being shown, you know.
He's played more games than Real Madrid, I think, recently.
I loved Akos's tweet after Hungary got nobbled by Portugal, saying that the Hungary Portugal game is the perfect illustration as to why Palace is the natural choice for a Hungarian.
Yeah, I saw that. That was typical Hungary, many would say. We're coming up close to time. I do have one more question for you guys. We're going to skirt over Scotland. Maybe we'll talk about them if we do another episode next week or something, because I know Rob will be shouting at his phone right now, but unfortunately they're not doing quite as well.
He's even worse than me. I'm a Scotland shirt, an England shirt, an Italy shirt, a Belgium shirt.
He just likes to spread his bets. No, but it would be nice to see all three home nations. I mean, my home nation aren't even there, but like, it would be good to see all three home nations go through. But Scotland are struggling a bit. But we'll talk about them a bit more next on the main. But maybe we'll get Rob on and we can talk about Scotland. We'll end though with a question here from CPFC BC.
DC.
One of our overseas representatives. You guys have just experienced a season as an honorary foreign fan, not attending games, no pub with mates, watching on TV, but no early morning, late night kickoffs, Twitter and text, WhatsApp during the match. Do you now have more or less respect for us? And that's from Brad. Kevin.
Do you know what? That's not something I'd even remotely thought of, but more, absolutely, yeah. It's... If that's Brad's experience every week of his Palace supporting life, except for the times when he's able to come in here, and please God he'll be able to do that sooner rather than later. And when he does, we'll take him for a drink. But yeah, well, that's really quite an insight, isn't it? Yeah, it must be terribly frustrating for that to be your normal Palace supporting experience. And yeah, I simply can't wait for it to get back to how it used to be. And yeah, I think we should acknowledge that our overseas fans, that's their entire experience.
I think Andy, you'd agree with that, wouldn't you? I mean, obviously the difference being that we've obviously had that sort of choice taken out of our hands by the pandemic, but I think we have got a bit of an insight into how Brad and other people overseas support Palace.
Yeah, I mean, it must take significant dedication to do that. Yeah. Season on season, because you kind of realise that Crystal Palace don't always play the best football, and just historically, and in general, not in any specific context or pinned to any particular manager or era, just generally. Yeah. And I think when you're doing it just for the love of watching or not the football, as opposed to just using it as a cover for your pub habit, takes that a bit more in the way of fastidiousness. So all power to the people who do that, and particularly at ridiculous times of the day. I mean, I found it difficult enough watching some of it at 3 p.m, let alone at 2 a.m. or 11 p.m. or whatever it is that some of the fans in the far flung corners of the globe end up watching it. So yes, kudos to all of them.
Before the under-23 games, I had quite a lengthy discussion with Ali about how early I was leaving the house to get to them, and whether the football was more important than the pub. But and it took a lot of effort to actually leave the pub to go to the under-23 game. If those under-23 games had been on telly, I think I'd probably still be there now. But that's thank you for that, Brad. That's a really interesting insight.
Yeah, J-Dog, your thoughts on that? Because as Andy says, we haven't even been doing the early kickoffs. It's still been difficult at times.
Yeah, I don't know what to say, really. I think you guys summed it up nicely. I'm just going to throw you a curveball and say that Ronaldo has scored 48 goals in 49 games for Portugal since the age of 30.
Since the age of 30?
Yeah.
Holy mother.
How about that?
Wow.
So you're making us feel bad about not having been productive when young in the manner of Jude Bellingham. And now you're making us feel bad for not being productive in our later years, like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, sorry about that. I heard that stat, and I had to share it. Even if it is completely out of context.
Well, it's given us something to think about, I think, before the next episode, Jesse. Mm. And as Eddie says, to feel bad about ourselves. Ukraine beat North Macedonia 2-1, by the way.
Oh, what? So, I taped it. I was going to watch it.
Right. Thank you very much. Thank you, three, for joining us. That was a good catch-up. We'll maybe do another one next week and talk more about Euros and stuff if there's more to talk about. But in the meantime, stay safe. Thanks for listening. Join our Patreon if you'd like to. Oh, and don't forget the beer52.com/FYP. Get your free beers now. And that's it. Thanks for listening. See you again soon. Goodbye.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Podcast Network.